The Jordana Sagittarius logo has been a staple of the pro peloton for decades. Made in Italy for cyclists by cyclists since 1979. Thanks to a long history of partnerships with the top teams in the sport, they have the knowledge to deliver clothing that the pros rely on.
Today, it's not just the Mitchelton Scott and Astana pro teams that benefit. Jordana's goal is to empower every rider to reach new heights. That's the drive that constantly pushes them to create and innovate. Everything Jordana makes is designed to enhance cycling performance and enjoyment, whether you're a professional racer or a weekend warrior.
Go check them out. Head over to jordanacycling.com to see what's new. For a limited time, you can get 25% off your purchase when you use the code PODCAST.
At first, a novelty. Now, some 6 weeks on, and with the easing of restrictions beginning in earnest, we check in with NTT Pro Cycling's Michael Valgren to see how he's holding up after being in this racing absence for so long and how he's planning on moving forward. This week on Put Your Socks On. Hello and welcome to Put Your Socks On, the podcast that's been easing restrictions to the road since its inception. My name is Angus Morton, and in our 51st episode, I am joined by the one and only Bobby J. G'day, mate. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Man, this week has flown by here at the Julek household, I can tell you that. I can't believe it's already been a week since we recorded the last time. Nothing really new to report, as we all seem to be just getting used to this new normal. Weather down here has been spectacular, by the way. And, you know, recently you just get that sense that people are ready to get back going again. So hopefully we'll start to transition out of lockdown, as Sir Dave Brailsford said on our last episode.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed the warmer weather. Has seen a lot more people out and about and itching to, you know, get back to normal life, whatever that will look like. But hopefully we can do that safely, right? Bobby, though, before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to get your take on some comments from team managers and team principals that have been coming out over the past week. And I think it's indicative of what you just said, right? Everyone's itching to get going again. And I think everyone's nervous that something will impede that progress, right? You and I sat down with Sir Dave Brailsford last week, and he expressed to us, as well as, you know, several other media outlets, his belief that the cycling business model needs to change. His thoughts have been echoed or even preceded by, you know, a few prominent observers, guys like Steve and the Outer Line, right? Even ourselves, we've spoken about this. Despite all this conversation, right, nobody's really put forward any clear steps towards reaching that solution. Nobody, in all these calls for change, like everyone thinks now seems to be the time, right? There's this pause, this disruption, and there's, you know, the ability, it's been demonstrated that there's the ability to change. This week, in direct response to all of those sort of calls, we've seen some prominent cycling characters, Bjarne Riis, Alberto Contador, Patrick Lefebvre, John Lelang, among others, to come out pretty much really in quick succession and reject for the call for this change, right? They've sort of said, you know, some have labeled Brailsford selfish, others have called the current model perfect. And these are, you know, these are coming from people who have laid off staff, have cut rider salaries. So, you know, evidently, there are some impacts going on right now. I wanted to get your take on how you see this playing out and what your read is on some of these comments.
Well, let me start by saying this is quite the rabbit hole. I don't think we realized how deep it goes until we started looking into this. Michele Accarone had some amazing insights, and what Sir Dave Brailsford told us is nothing new. Things are going to be hard to change the way that they're set up now. We see that. Smart people, I mean, very, very smart people have come up for years now with suggestions, strategies, even a roadmap of how to improve things. But it seems to me like ego is getting in the way of progressive thinking and cooperation. This is going to take a strong leader from the USA, is what Michele Accarone told us, to sort this all out. Sir Dave Brailsford did mention that they were a long ways away from, you know, imposing any real change between the teams. But I have to say, after that 50th episode with Sir Dave Brailsford, I was very optimistic that this situation would be the impetus for change and cooperation and just simple get-alongedness, right? But when I read Bjarne Riis's comments about, you know, Dave being selfish and John Lalonde saying that, you know, things are perfect, man, I have to say I just felt really deflated. Who knows? Maybe there are a lot of talking between behind the scenes between the teams, but what they said just felt wrong to me. And then on top of that, Patrick Lefebvre saying that this is not time to go to war with the ASO, that really surprised me because, yes, this is not time to go to war. This is time to cooperate, right? To me, what are these people thinking? It's not wartime. It's survival time. And the parties have to come together or, you know, this thing is going to get burnt down to the ground. So I guess we'll see what happens with the when the UCI releases its revised autumn calendar on Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May. But during these special times, we have to do special things, perhaps some new things. So let's just pray that the powers that be in over the entire sport really step up to the plate.
And that's it, right? Like, we're seeing this play out in the media, and then you can only sort of trust what's going, you know, hear what's going on behind the scenes from, you know, just getting, you know, comments from different people. But I think, like, there is something to that sentiment that's going on right now. And, like, you know, speaking with Dave last week, he was like, he said that he was really impressed with and had a lot of respect for a lot of the people who ran the teams. And he did say, you know, we all have our differences, but in this period, he's been really inspired by how everybody's kind of come together, you know. And I was left thinking, well, great, at least there's a dialogue that's begun now. And maybe once we get racing, you know, obviously change. Well, I mean, we've seen the change can happen overnight, right? Like Dave said it, who would have thought that you could shut down a city like New York? But, you know, we're thinking, well, maybe there will be at least the movement or at least the thinking towards some change. And then, you know, three really prominent cycling characters or four really prominent cycling characters come out and sort of say the opposite. As you said, I think that right now, I think it could be nerves. Everyone's sort of on the ropes as this has progressed, right? And there's sort of been less and less certainty as this has gone on. And the fear of the fact that, you know, the 2020 season might disappear is I think, putting a lot of people on the edge of their seat. And their thinking is, let's not ruffle the feathers. Let's just, like, make sure the Tour de France happens and we can talk about next year then, because without that, you know, there may not be a next year for a lot of these teams. And the reality of that, I think, is pretty daunting to even begin to consider. As you said, though, hopefully, you know, we can get a little certainty and the world opens up and we're successful in doing that. Bobby, let's move on to the focus of this week's episode. And that is Michael Valgren. Turning pro at the tender age of 21, Michael quickly won consecutive under-23 Liège-Bastogne-Liège editions, establishing himself as a rider to watch in the future. Fast forward that to 2018, and Michael came of age, winning Umloop Nieuwsblad and the Monument Amstel Gold Race, as well as finishing fourth at the Tour of Flanders.
Yeah, Michael Valgren made a very strong impression on me right away. I think it was his first year at Tinkoff Saxo Bank, and I was watching the World Championship Road Race in Ponferrada, Spain, where he was away, and he was so close to being able to stay on Mikael Kwiatkowski's wheel in the final there. But his time at Astana in 2017 and especially 2018 was where he took a huge step forward. Following that coming of age, moving from a strong man of the peloton to a team leader, Valgren moved to his current team, NTT, formerly Dimension Data, in one of the most anticipated moves for the 2019 season. Plagued by bad form and a series of setbacks in 2019, it turned out to be a winless one, but with 2020 and a chance to redeem his un-Valgren-esque condition, as I'll say it, seemed like with the COVID-19 situation, it just delayed his chances of ever getting to his favorite classics again this year. We don't know.
And with those restrictions set to ease and all of our fingers crossed that we will see some racing as the plan is, what can only be described as an insufferable two months of uncertainty, we sat down with Michael to hear how he's been holding up and how he plans to move forward.
Hello, Michael Valgren, and welcome to Put Your Socks On. How you doing, man? How are you and your family holding up?
Hey, Bobby. Hey, good to hear from you. Yeah, we're great, actually. We're back here in Denmark. We escaped Monaco and France before the lockdown happened down there. So here in north of Denmark, it's been pretty normal, almost. Like, I come from a region where everything is pretty spread out, so not a lot of people. So it's been pretty chilled up here, actually, to be honest.
Were you ever tempted to stay down in Monaco, or was that basically government mandated that you guys return to Denmark?
It wasn't mandatory from the government. They only wanted people back from vacation, but people who live abroad, they actually said, like, you should stay where you live. But in terms of my training, it would just be much better to go back to Denmark where I could train outside instead of being on a home trainer for 50 days.
And on that, you sort of said things aren't that much different for you back there. What does your day look like right now? You know, you said you can kind of train. Are you training normally? You know, what's the difference?
Oh, just to take it from the beginning, I found it was really period, actually. Like, my head was just, you know, up and down, and I couldn't really get a routine until I talked to my manager, Joao. He said, like, Michael, you got to get a routine. Got to get a start your day out like you normally do. And then, yeah, and just start like I normally would do, like my morning coffee, training. Then I kind of find the motivation again, even though we don't have races. But I was working on some points that I wasn't really good at in training, and actually I found some kind of motivation in that. And then just by talking to people, that helped me a lot. But it's a bit strange situation now. Like, it's still like maybe 100 days to be racing, you know, and like, what do you train for? So now I'm just trying to keep the shape. I just had a small break, actually, not to just do the same for like 150 days. So it's clear the head, clear the legs. So
yeah, that's got to be hard. I mean, I feel sorry for all you guys not having a real set timeline or objectives, because we're still kind of waiting, even though they did send out a tentative date for a couple races, including the Tour de France. It just seems all muddled a little bit. But when I saw that you've been doing some pretty long rides, like, are you riding by yourself or small groups, or how does that work up in Denmark right now?
I'm mostly training by myself. In the weekend, sometimes a group ride, but yeah, I kind of respected the rules from the government not to train with too many people. And actually, I enjoy my own company at the time, or at this time. So it's been good. But I haven't been training long or like hours, but I've been training some kilometers because it's pretty fat up here. You go out at like 35, 37 kilometer average speed. So then you get some miles in. Yeah. So it's been pretty good coming back, actually, get some speed in the legs, small climbs.
And being able to see you, you look super fit right now. I mean, during lockdown, do you get on a scale? Do you even look at that? Or are they totally banned and put under the bathroom sink these days?
Oh, my scale is always hidden in the locker somewhere. It's like a landmine, you know? Actually, I'm trying. I'm having a pretty healthy relationship now with everything. I have a beer now and then and just having fun, because I know it's been like a long time before we race. So, but I still train good, so I also need to eat some, you know, and then I just enjoy the company with my wife and a bottle of wine now and then. So I feel good, like I've been training well. And you know Bjarne's come back to MTT, and we had like a team meeting. He likes that, like, have a team building camp online, and he told us to train harder, be smarter with food and everything. And then, you know, so the team is trying to have a look at us. So of course I'm going on the scale now and then. And also now with the Swift races coming up, we need to know our weights so we don't cheat, etc. So yeah, I'm not too bad, actually. I was 70 and a half the other day, so that's pretty good for me. Just hope I have some power.
And I want to hear about the Swift races and how the team's sort of like maintaining, I guess, that sense of camaraderie between everybody. But you mentioned a bit before, like, it, you know, at first it was hard because mentally, right? Because like everything gets cancelled, and obviously you're like a big part of your season coming up, right? And it's now been missed.
yeah, like what, how was that, and how did you kind of, I guess, move past that and put yourself in a place where you're like, okay, it's fine, you know, moving on, and how have you been able to motivate yourself and kind of overcome that?
Yeah, like you say, it was actually pretty shit for me as a classic rider. Just had the classics coming up, especially because I had a special way this season of coming into the classics. I went a bit old school, did some long, long blocks in the winter, not too intense. And then I used the race in the southern France in the beginning of February to get back to race with them and actually use Paris-Nice as a training race. So I never really got to see if that new style of approach to the sprint classic was beneficial for me. I can only see that in my training that I was doing really good training blocks after I came back to Denmark. So I think it would have worked, but we never really saw it in the real life. So that was hard, but that was also what kept me motivated to show these numbers in training, that I can see, okay, wow, I'm doing 1 minute peaks and stuff like that. That was actually super nice that the training and calculation we did was actually working.
And you said that you were able to, or you kind of now able to enjoy yourself a little bit. You're kind of like trying to relieve the pressure, like so long as you train well. What is there any positive thing to take out of a situation like this? Have you ever been able to reflect on something and be like, okay, maybe, you know, there is something I can learn coming forward?
Yeah, I think I have two things actually. Like, one of the things is on the bike side is that since this lockdown started and then all the corona thing, I started working on like 1 minute efforts and like short intense efforts. And I could see within 2-3 weeks, I increased like 10-15%. And that was actually what I missed in the races like Paris-Nice and these races. Like, I couldn't cope with the lactate. So now I found like some really good efforts that I know now works for me, becoming really good at what I'm good at in the first place already. So that was actually one good thing. And the other good thing is I can see my son grow up. I have a 5 month old son. And normally I wouldn't be home and see him growing up. And in the last 2 months, he's just been learning new things every day. So that's a nice thing to be part of. So yeah, actually there's some good things about this corona thing for me at least.
Yeah, you got to take out the positives and maybe even find out a new hobby or a new interest, because there is a lot more time. You guys aren't traveling as much, but let's change gears here a little bit and talk about you and how you got into cycling. Who was your cycling idol? Who had the biggest influences on your cycling career?
Oh, I've always been a footballer. I don't know, do you call it soccer over there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Soccer.
And I always played that until I was 12, 13 years old. And actually, I was pretty good at it, if I may say so. I was like in this qualification game towards the national, and I made it to the fourth round of fifth or five. Then I didn't get selected, then I got like pissed. Then I started cycling actually, because I got a jersey from my neighbor, which he won in a cycling competition, but he was too big for it. It was an old CSC Tiscali jersey. And then it was the summer, you know, Jakob Piel, he was actually my starting idol, like on that team, because I could kind of see myself and him with the long blonde hair. And yeah, I never had a really big, star that I looked up to. But when I started riding seriously, I really liked the way Fabian was riding, his style on the bike, and such a good rider. I was trying to imitate him, like how he was sitting on the bike, you know, use those big hips and glutes. And I think he was my growing up idol. I just started by coincidence, and I love being outside riding the bike on my mom's giant city bike. So it's a bit random, actually.
Do you remember your first win? And to date, is that your favorite cycling memory? And if it's not, what is your favorite cycling memory?
There's been many, actually. I remember my first win. It was like when I was a youth rider, like under 15. I won a time trial. It wasn't so nice because all the good riders were selected for the national team. So they were in Austria racing a race, but you know, a win is a win. So it was nice. Then the year after, I was junior. Then I qualified for the national, and I went to Luxembourg, and we did this General Pattern, and I won the first stage there as a first year junior. And I was beating this second year junior, Tjom van Kirschhoek, who was now riding for CCC. He was a big name back then. He won like Paris-Roubaix as a junior, and yeah, he was a big guy. So that was a huge win for me. And then that is really still in my mind. I just remember I opened the sprint from like a K out, because I was still like a rookie, you know, I was just so goddamn strong. So that was a good win.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. Ever since you kind of popped up on people's radar, my first thing was, damn, this kid is strong. Absolutely strong. But I mean, you've won some classics. You know, you're an overall strong man of the Peloton. But what race that you haven't won yet is on like your to-do list to win in the future? What race really motivates you now?
Yeah, you make it sound like I won like a lot of races. I didn't. I would love to though. Like, I think, yeah, like you say, I consider myself a strong rider. And I think I should be able to win more, but I'm still pretty young, 28 only. But my favorite race now is Tour Flanders. I fell in love with the Cobblestones classics pretty early. I started racing them only in 2017, my first year in Astana, when Lars Mikkelsen got me into the Cobblestone Classics team. And just, you know, Tour Flanders is just such a special race. It's just the atmosphere and the people there, they go crazy up the Quadamon, the smell of beer and the shouting, and it's a little bit like riding the World Championship, which I also love. But I think Tour Flanders is the biggest one.
I want to hear about NTT, the team you're at now. Like, you have Doug Ryder as the principal, right? Bjarne Riis has come on board as team manager. And then, you know, you guys, so it's sort of like, you know, pretty new-ish setup, right, this year. And you guys obviously started really well. I want to hear about, like, you know, having Bjarne come on board and that sort of change. Like, how well did you know him beforehand? And yeah.
Because probably you obviously know Bjarne very well also, and you know what he stands for. But I must say, before Bjarne, he came into the team, it was actually Lars Mikkelsen who changed the team from last year to this year, trying to get the team to be a team. We were not really working well together last year, and we were all riding for ourselves. And like, good guys, every one of them. But we just didn't have this unit, you know. And then it was also from above, management-wise. Like, there was some big clashes between Douglas and Rolf and Daniel Green. And then some stuff there that Lars, he took care of. And then when he got that thing turning, yeah, then Bjarne came in. And Bjarne, he made a big, big change of the whole staff, I think, because respect for Bjarne, and they know what he stands for. But the staff are so afraid that Bjarne would bring in all his entourage. But Bjarne, you know, was observing the first camp and like really talked to every one of the staff and made them sure that, you know, you have a job here as long as you are committed and you do your job. And, you know, and everybody just kind of fell in love with Bjarne and his long speeches after dinner, and where he was sitting and just looking at people, not talking really. And then, you know, that's like the way I think Bjarne does. He just stares at you and then wait for you to talk. Like, he just stares and then you kind of open up. It's just so random. It's so weird. But he made a big, big impression for the whole team. That, like, now we're really working as one unit, and then we have this hashtag called One Team, and we really in for it. And yeah. Not stronger than the weakest link in the team, and that's what we really try to do.
And how has he been? How has it been during this lockdown now? Like, the team staying together. You said, you know, you've had like a bunch of meetings and things like that. Is there still like a really strong sense between the team? And I mean, particularly like, I mean, maybe not necessarily so much for you because you're able to go outside and train, but the guys that are stuck in places that they can't. How is that kind of keeping everyone together being?
So we have this general meeting every Saturday, the whole team, all riders, all staff. And we had some different topics. Bjarne had a meeting, a presentation last Saturday about teamwork. And before that, Victor Campenaerts had a presentation about his hour record and what he do when he goes in altitude and stuff like when he do like heat.
Adaptation?
Yeah, sorry. So we've been doing these small presentations now every Saturday. And with that, also, we have had these Swift rides where the guys, like you say, live in Spain or Italy. They've been kind of the leader in, so they had the opportunity to do some rides with the fans. And I think like that, it's been pretty easier to train, because it's not fun when you can't go outside. And then you had like the opportunity to do Monday and Wednesday core with two of our Swannies. So yeah, we actually been pretty much together without being together. So I think the team is doing really well of trying to keep people committed and yeah, not lose the mentality.
And then you've obviously been doing a bit of Zwift racing, and there's about, I mean, the Zwift 5 started today. Tell me how you feel about virtual racing. Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, there's positive things and negative things about it. I think it's, I think Swift is a good platform. I think that the Rory thing that we saw last week or 2 weeks ago, that was something to be improved. But I'm racing tomorrow and see how it goes. And I think I'm better on the road, but I'm a little bit smarter than other guys. Because in terms of watts per kilo, I'm for sure not going to win tomorrow. But unless I'm going to fix my power meter, and maybe have a chance. So that's obviously one thing I don't like about it. You have different power meters, different trainers, and it'll just never be the same, you know? Like, for sure, I'm going to put my weight 2 kilo down. So.
Very diplomatic answer there. Once racing resumes, though, do you think, there are obviously a lot of kinks and it is, you know, I know how I feel about it, but do you think there is potentially a place for it in the future, like integrating it into the actual season, right?
I think it's possible to do it. You see the right setup for sure. There should be like a place where you can go to, though, and have your stuff checked and your weight and everything. But it's not something that I would do. I think my heart and passion is on the road. That's why I'm riding my bike. Like, if I'm on the trainer, it's just because I have to, because I want to. Swift for sure made it a lot easier. Also, like the good home trainer now, from Tex and Wahoo or whatever they're called, like they are really nice. So the experience on the trainer is not what it used to be, but anytime, any day, I'd rather go outside and go on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you have to use what you have and stay connected. But yes, that's why you guys are professional road racers, right? Is because tactics and being efficient in the peloton, that's what really makes the difference, not just, you know, pure power for 45-minute races and all. But as these restrictions are easing and dates are being firmed up for events like the Tour de France and the Worlds, how are you planning to tackle your preparation for the resumption of the 2020 season? I'm sure you guys have had, you know, tons of what-if scenarios. If we start here, this is what we do. If we start there, this is what we do. But taking into account that there's not going to be that typical lead up because it just kind of got busted 100% these last couple of months, there was an Excel spreadsheet that was leaked a couple days ago. And it kind of had we'll find out tomorrow, because evidently tomorrow they're actually going to hopefully release more of a definitive schedule. But just looking at this, it's going to be a pretty interesting schedule. So how do you guys set up your phase plan to tackle this complicated and maybe even sporadic schedule with the Tour de France, with the classics kind of all going at the same time, overlapping Grand Tours, et cetera?
No, it's pretty easy, Bobby, actually. We have one plan already. We just all going to be in from the gun and to see how long the form is holding. That's like the plan from Bjarne and the team, because there's not like time to use like August to get in shape again, because you never know what's going to happen like in the autumn. Maybe the pandemic will start again. So I think we will try to aim to be ready just from the 1st of August to hit all the races with big form and then just see how long we can hold it. And then it doesn't really matter if it's the Tour or if it's Tour Flanders or Tour Poland or whatever. We're just going to try and win each race we want to go to.
And we've heard, speaking about like the 2020 season and what that will look like, right? There's been quite a bit of, you know, I guess there's not too much else to talk about, but quite a few team managers, some journos, things like that, even some riders talking about whether there needs to be a change in the cycling model or not coming out of this crisis. And I'm sort of interested to hear, not necessarily about your opinion on that, but just how you feel as a rider. Like, do you guys have a voice? Do you have a way to express what you would like to see the cycling season look like, or what you would like to see the racing structure look like?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, we have a riders' union, but it's not something that we're are using a lot, because they don't have a big voice, to be honest. It's hard to get something done within cycling these days. You know, like UCI and ASO, and like they're just so big and powerful. Even though team managers, I think they're already trying, and they listen to us as a rider. So they are our voices already. But I kind of also just like cycling how it is and how it's always been. You know, like this old school mentality. I think we need to look into that again and bring that back. I think that's what works for cycling. Then maybe we have to do it another thing in terms of the business-wise, like to keep the teams running. But I think the calendar and how the races are now, I think it's pretty okay.
So you've been in the sport for a while. You're what, 28 years old now? You turned pro at 19. So you've seen a lot of changes. I mean, just looking at you, I've seen a lot of changes. But, you know, you're married now. You have a child. You've established yourself as one of the top classic riders and overall strongmen of the Peloton. But I'm curious, 28-year-old Michael Valgren, if 19-year-old Michael Valgren pulls up, what advice would you give that young Neo Pro that in these years since being in the sport that you wish you would have known then that you know now?
What advice would I give myself? I think I'll probably tell myself that I should have more faith in myself, more believe in myself, not listening to, or maybe listen to people, but don't think that they are thinking, you know, bad about you. Oh, I had a lot of, I've never been a lean or skinny rider. And, you know, like, it's just something that you have to be in cycling. Like, you look at people's legs and see their veins, like, oh, he's strong, you know, but I was strong without having a vein for a long time. But that really bothered my mind. And I was like so obsessed with food that I could, you know, not eat for a while. And then I would just binge eat for a week. You know, I just had the total wrong idea of how to do it. So I think if I could give myself that advice to be more smart about that, that would help me a lot. But like, that's why I've been so good at the last few years. Like, now I know what to do. I know my body. I know how food works, and I keep learning, and I'm really interested in how to eat and when to eat, what to eat, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something I would say to him. Maybe train less also.
And speaking about, like you sort of mentioned, you like the old school mentality of sport. You even said right back at the start, right, you kind of at the beginning of, well, for this season, your preparation, you know, was old school. What would you like to see, you know, like taking it back to that old school, what sort of things would you like to see the sport of cycling embrace now from the old days?
Maybe you cannot say, but I think I would wish some more respect. There's just not that kind of respect anymore for teams or leaders when they have a jersey or have to defend the jersey. Like, you know, some teams now when they have a jersey, it's like, oh, no responsibility. But where before, you know, if you have a jersey, you would honor it and you have the respect from all the teams and you would maybe talk more together. And now I think it's so much more about flicking everyone, you know, flicked or be flicked, you know. So I think this should be more like, of course it shouldn't, but more like a gentleman's sport, you know, like, you know, the raw power talks and so maybe some tactical, but not all this crazy big chances in the corners and you know, riding people into ditches. And I think that's too much sometimes.
Michael, thank you so much for your time. And we wish you, your family and team all the best, and hope that once this cycling season does finally start again, it brings much success and everything that you hope it will.
Thank you very much. I hope so too. And also all the best to you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you too, mate. I'd love to meet you and all the best. Take care. Bobby, that was great to hear from Michael. He offered some, I think, pretty honest and pretty interesting insights there into how he's been coping, you know, and also to how the team's kind of been functioning. And it's nice to get that perspective from a rider, right? We've been hearing from team managers like Brailsford, you know, race organizers or former race organizers like Michele Acquarone. And to hear from a rider who's in the thick of it, it has been really good. What are your, you know, what are your sort of thoughts on how he's, you know, how he's been handling this, and then what he's, you know, talking about moving forward, and how, you know, how he sort of utilized this time of pause?
Well, I'll be lying if I say that I'm not biased towards Michael Valgren. I love his style of racing. I love the way he thinks. He's such a smart kid. He's such a good kid. And some of the takeaways that I took from his interview was, yeah, that respect in the Peloton. You know, like one of the things that he wanted to see change, you know, with all these young guys coming into the sport, I get that. It's not the, you know, ingrained in you since birth. These guys are coming in and, you know, that lack of respect sometimes is what kind of creates some of this flicking, as he put it. But the one thing that he was super honest with was his weight. When I had contact with Michael, he was a little bit bigger. Like he said, he didn't have many veins in his legs, and he said that got into his head. And he's been able to adjust, and he's working on his weaknesses rather than just depending on his strengths all the time to get him through. So that just shows to me that this kid is maturing. You know, he's married, he has a kid now, he's experienced a great season, he's experienced a poor season, and now he's kind of found his niche again with Bjarne Riis, you know, back at the team supporting him. And he just sounded happy to me. And for me, a happy rider is a good rider. If you have that sort of support, if you get your confidence back, like it sounds like he is, he has a lot of big victories ahead of him. So I just love talking to the kid anytime, and then getting him on the podcast and having him be so open and honest with us. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, I would still consider him a young rider, right? He's 28. He's still got his prime ahead of him. I thought it was interesting to hear him, first of all, as you said, like talk about, you know, his weight, and then also to talk about these new young guys that are super strong, that are coming through. And that's all numbers and statistic based. And I really got the feeling, you know, again, the way he spoke about the Zwift racing is like, you know, racing out on the road is racing. You got to use your head as well as your legs. And there's so many factors that go into that. And I think that, you know, even with the sentiments that he said about going back, you know, back in time a little bit, and you know, taking the sport, bring some of these old school things into the future, which I certainly would have to agree with. And he's not the only person from the World Tour that said that to me. I think that that's something I really took. Well, I found really interesting about that is like bike racing is racing, right? It's not data. It's not a data download. And I'm like, that's one thing that I've really gotten excited about. And I hope that fans and people, right? Like data, the rise of data, we've spoken about this with the guys from Training Peaks, right? Like that's certainly influenced drastically and changed the sport in a big way. But in the end, it's racing, right? And it's drama. And that only comes from being out on the road. That only comes from learning the craft of the sport and using your head. And, you know, I think the sport of cycling would be remiss to let go of that. And, you know, I hope that all of this Zwift racing for whatever, you know, for all of its greatness in this situation and for what it's, you know, done holding the sport together right now, I do feel that I hope that we learn from the fact that, you know, watching a bunch of avatars kind of pedal in this, you know, awkwardly computerized way. The fluidity of watching a guy like Michael Valgren on the road performing in on those cobbles of Flanders will be, you know, we'll have everyone excited to embrace the racing and that core of the sport, which is, you know, a bunch of guys outsmarting each other and outriding each other on the road.
And that's it. That's all we have time for this week. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And thanks again to Michael Valgren of NTT Pro Cycling for joining us. You can also get the show as well as a ton of other fantastic cycling journalism over at velonews.com. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Spotify, whatever your favorite go-to podcast site may be. Just search for Put Your Socks On or PYSO, P-Y-S-O. Please continue to show your support by subscribing to this program, and please spread the word by telling your friends about us.
This podcast is made by myself, Angus Morton, obviously Bobby J, and our faithful editor, producer, Eddie Rogers. You can reach out to us on social media at PhysoPod on Twitter, at ThatIsGus, or at Bobby.Julik on Instagram. Reach out to us there. Give us your suggestions, feedbacks, thoughts, whatever else. Until next week, thank you all for listening. Take it easy.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And as always, as we transition out of quarantine, don't forget to put your socks on.